Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you can find the time to explore the mind of a stripper,
then you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? They're the thick-ass kids.
This is Prime Time.
We're not like you. We're grown-ups.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Oh, my goodness.
Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik with Prime Time on 1080 The Fan.
We've already taken a look at our brothers to the north, the Washington State Cougars. Later on this week, we'll touch base with Oregon State, Camp, UW, Stanford. We'll do a little whip around, get you caught up here on everything you need to know about your Pac-12 football teams. And then a team with a lot of hype coming in, and we'll find out whether that hype is justified or not, is your Oregon Ducks just outside of the top 25. But I read today that John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News, who's kind of one of the big voices in the Pac-12, he thinks Oregon is a top 10 team in the country. So let's check in with this man, Matt Prem, 24/7 Sports. Matt, thanks for taking a couple minutes for us.
Hey, no problem, guys. How you doing?
Doing good. I don't know if you saw that, but Wilner has Oregon as a top 10 team in the country. You buying that sort of stuff, or is the hype train really left the station on Oregon this year?
that's kind of high for my taste. I think it's kind of crazy that they're not in the top 25 because they do have Justin Herbert, who's, you know, look, when he was healthy last season, the team averaged over 50 points per game. I don't care what kind of defense it is. If you're scoring 50 points a game, you're going to be in a majority of those games that you're playing that season. So, and I think, you know, Oregon's going to be right around that, you know, same level of potency with Herbert back this season, even though Royce Freeman's gone and, you know, you lose Charles Nelson and Tyrell Crosby along the offensive line because you've got four of the other starters are all back. You've uploaded a couple of impressive recruits along the offensive line. You've added Tafari Hines at receiver. And then at running back, you've got options. You know, I don't think you have one guy that can do what Royce Freeman did by himself, but you've got a lot of options at that position. And, you know, the defense is going to be good. So I can't understand why they aren't in the top 25, but I'm not going to sit here and say that they're a top 15 team even, at least right now. I think they have the potential to do it, but I look at this Oregon team right now as they've got a lot of potential and they're in that show me phase. You know, I think you guys could be really good. I think you guys could contend for the Pac-12 championship. I think you guys could win the Pac-12 North, but you need to show it before I can come out and say that, you know, you're going to go that far.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know what to do with Oregon. Cause when I look at it on paper, this is a 9-win team minimum. Like you just look from a talent standpoint, but you know, they were so bad without Justin Herbert. And then to be fair, even with Herbert, Herbert's never beaten a good team in the 2 years that he's been the quarterback. And the time that we did see him, they were getting bludgeoned by Boise State. It's like, I want to like what I see on paper, but there's part of me that's a little scared that the hype is too much for Oregon.
Yeah, I think this is their schedule is very easy. Yeah. And a couple years ago, I think it was one of the first years Chris Peterson had at UW, you know, they went like 8-4 or 9-3 or something of that nature. And they weren't that good. It's just, they played a really easy schedule. And then the next year they were a much better team, but they had more losses because they played a tougher schedule. And, you know, I think that's kind of what this Oregon team is going to be this season, at least going in, is that they play such a soft non-con because Texas A&M, you know, backed out of that deal when they moved to the SEC and used a clause that was in the contract. And, you know, and Oregon couldn't get another big name team in time. And so you've got three cream puffs. You have Stanford at home. You have Washington at home. and you don't play USC at all. Your toughest games are, you know, probably on the road going to be what, at Utah in late November, or
maybe
at
Pullman.
Arizona in the middle of October. I mean, those are two teams that are probably going to make a bowl game, but I don't think anyone's going to be out here beating a drum saying Utah and Arizona are going to win their division, win the South Division. Like, you know, so Oregon's schedule is very manageable. You know, if you can stay healthy at quarterback and you can have a defense that was like last season, a top 25 defense, that those two things alone should be able to get you to seven or eight wins. And then, you know, can you knock off Stanford? Can you knock off UW and get that ninth win or get that 10th win, which is very attainable in my eyes?
Yeah, I mean, they beat Stanford there. You know, look out, because, you know, like you said, the first three are cupcakes. Stanford's at home, and then you got Cal, which you should be able to go handle on the road. Then you're staring Washington October 13th. I think there's a real good chance that you've got an undefeated Oregon and maybe an undefeated UW, and maybe that's where the rubber meets the road. That's when we find out how good Oregon is.
I think the Stanford game is going to define this season, because if they go into that game and they win, like you said, they could be undefeated playing Washington, and we could have two teams that are somewhere in the, you know, top 15-ish range. UW would probably be close to the top five, I would think. And yeah, you know, I would think game day would be salivating to come down to Eugene for that. But then Oregon's going to be fired up and jacked up, and so, you know, but if they lose to Stanford, you know, then how do they handle going on the road the next week to Cal? Because Cal brings back 10 of their 11 starters, including a quarterback, all their offensive linemen. And, you know, I think their defense is certainly going to be suspect for the Bears. But, you know, Wilcox is a good coach, and he's got some veteran coaches around him. And that's going to be a sneaky team, I think, for Cal, is they've got some dudes on offense. They've got a good quarterback, you know, spread offense. And, you know, if things go right, they could be a sneaky tough team. And so how is that Stanford game is going to dictate so much for Oregon? Because if they go in and they win, you know, like we said, it sets the bar even higher. You know, the momentum is going to be going for Oregon's way. But if they lose, you know, that Stanford game could be billed as a first chance for Oregon to say we're back to Oregon standards. And if they lose, and if they lose bad, you know, they could get beat twice, you know, by Stanford, because they go to Cal the next week and play a tough team on the road. Who could beat them?
Yeah, Colorado too. I mean, that's we'll talk about them in our whip around later. That is a vicious game right there. What's been kind of the headlines so far out of camp? What's kind of been the buzz down in Eugene?
You know, I think I talked with Cyrus Abilakio, a redshirt freshman running back, today after practice, and he kind of echoed things that I've kind of picked up on my own, that practice just seems to be run smoother. Guys seem to be getting more out of each individual drill. And Cristobal has hammered home three things during spring ball and now into fall camp. One is physicality. The Ducks are going to be playing with much more physicality on both sides of the football. Two, doing things fundamentally sound. And then three, being held accountable. And Cyrus echoed all of that and saying that this year's camp has gone much more smoother than it did the year before. And I asked him kind of, what does that mean? Can you explain that? And he said that, you know, guys are in better condition. Guys are, you know, the drills make more sense. Guys are doing things and, you know, there's more clarity of why they're doing it. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Jim Mastro, the running backs coach, or Michael Johnson, the receivers coach, or Hayward, the safeties coach, stop a drill, pull a starter or a third string or a walk-on, and tell them, look, you are doing this wrong. This is how you're doing it wrong. We need it to be done this way, and this is how you're going to do it to get it this way, and this is why we wanted to do it. Get back in there and do it this way. And then, you know, the teaching that's going on with Cristobal at Oregon this spring and now over into the fall is pretty noticeable. And guys are saying that. Guys are saying it's helping. The weight room has certainly helped with Aaron Fell, the new strength coach. And it's not just they're packing on, you know, weight. It's functional weight. And, you know, offensive lineman Shane Lemieux told me in spring, this past spring, that he's never been able to do a somersault before. And now with Aaron Feld's strength program and working on his flexibility and he can do somersaults. And he's like, I'm over 320 pounds, and I shouldn't be doing that, but I can. And, you know, the offensive linemen and the defensive linemen and whatnot, they've talked about how they just seem quicker. They can bend better. They can turn their hips better and just more football functional than they were last season. And then from the player perspective, you know, the usual guys, Herbert, you know, Troy Dye, Jalen Jelks, Jordan, those are guys that stand out, you know, during camp. But I would say, like, a true freshman, Adrian Jackson at linebacker, or safety, Javon Holland. You know, those are two guys that are true freshmen that are coming into positions where there's kind of some established players ahead of them, and they've forced their way into the second team and sometimes even with the first team. And, you know, I think those two guys have established themselves as guys that are going to play on Saturdays, and they're, you know, it may not just be just special teams. It could be, you know, they get in on nickel packages. Javon Holland's been working with the ones and nickel packages at inside the slot at safety. They've got Adrian Jackson now backing up Troy Dye on the inside and also working on the outside, an outside linebacker, getting him more versatility. On the other side of the football, you know, Johnny Johnson is a sophomore, true sophomore that, you know, Cyrus told me today, that guy's just making plays all over the place from a receiver standpoint. You know, Dylan Mitchell told me the same thing on media day last week, that, you know, Johnny's really improved his playmaking ability. And, you know, Oregon's got, I think, a couple pieces on both sides of the ball that are going to become bigger names this season. And those are kind of the guys that people are talking about right now.
How's your handspring game? You turning those out of practice, showing up the rest of the media?
It's been a while since I've had to use my hamstrings to run super far. So it's been a while, but, you know, I did get in a run a couple days ago to beat the team across the football field to get a good shot for some photos. So yeah, I showed it off a little bit.
Yeah, I can cartwheel. I don't know if I'm a handspring, and I'm no Aaron Feld or anything, but I'll throw out like a bastardized cartwheel or something down there. Are you doing like the fill the sleeves challenge? He's throwing down the gauntlet to the media members, a bunch of buff media guys.
Oh, no,
there.
That's not me. That's not me. No, unfortunately, as fill the sleeves, I've been filling the belly, unfortunately.
Hey, well, you're a barbecue man. I mean, if people don't follow you on Twitter, I'm telling you, you know, it's one thing to be able to fill the sleeves, but you fill the barbecue pit. That's
it's kind of my way of decompressing, and my wife blames Oregon for that, because I was just the average dude that had a barbecue in the backyard, and then Oregon went to the national championship in 2014, and I was fully immersed in Texas barbecue and came back and was like, I want to learn how to do this. And so I've self-taught myself, and it's gotten out of control.
Well, he's a good follow on Twitter. Definitely check it out and read his stuff, 24/7 Sports, or as Rob likes to call it, the 247 Sports. He's a big fan of it, but you guys do a great job down there. And thanks for taking a couple minutes with us, Matt.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
All right. Appreciate it. I don't know what to make of Oregon. I mean, honestly, I think that I know it's weird to say that Oregon to me is the mystery team in the North, but they really are. Like, I think UW is the class of the Pac-12. And I think UW, if they beat Auburn, has a real good chance to go to the college football playoff. I think I have a good idea of what Stanford's going to be. I have a pretty good idea what Washington State's going to be. I think Oregon State, unfortunately, is going to be bad. I think Cal will be middle of the road. I don't know what to make of Oregon. I think Oregon should, like, I know some people are saying 7 games. I think Oregon should win 9 games. Like, they're more talented, and they supposedly have the number one quarterback in the country and a schedule that's soft as baby. You know what? They should win, but they didn't have a lot of big wins last year. Yeah, they put up 50 points with Herbert against bad teams, but Arizona State still got him, and Arizona State wasn't a good team. They got hammered by Boise State. You got a new coaching staff in place. He's right. I think that Stanford game will tell you a lot about what Oregon is bringing to the table. But if you find a way to beat Stanford at home, and remember, that's a month, your first month, you don't have to leave Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And then your big road trip is Cal, and then you get UW at home. You couldn't ask for a schedule to set up better for you. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see if the hype is warranted and if Oregon can put together a special season. Because I do think of all the dark horse contenders, I think Oregon's won. I'll still take UW, but I think there is a chance that Oregon puts together a special season and ends up being a real contender. All right, we come back. Maybe we'll talk a little baseball, the return. After a mistake for a Seattle Mariner? Or I don't know if you can call it a mistake. But there's a return, but maybe not at the position you think. That when we come back. Primetime here on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
When's the last time you got stung by a bee?
God, I think I was a kid.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I got stung
by
a bee.
Or something, junior high?
And I got stung by a bee in the damn face. Like right underneath my eye.
Oh, man.
And I did it while going about 25 miles an hour. And it's driving me insane. I feel like it's connected to every nerve that's in my face. And I went out for a bike ride on Sunday. And not only did I end up swallowing a bug, but then I got stung by a damn bee. The animal uprising continues.
See, that's what you get for trying to be like good and healthy and stuff.
Yeah, I tried to go out. You try to better yourself a little bit. And I was going down this big ass hill. It was out by Battleground Lake. This is a huge hill. And so you're flying down this thing. And it was one of those two where I actually had to apply the brakes a little bit. It got a little uncomfortably
a little
fast. Yeah, I was like, eh. And then out of nowhere, I got hit with a bah! Like I had my mouth open and I don't know what it was, but I swallowed something. Like the bug hit my teeth and then went down. And while I was busy being disgusted with that and trying not to crash, so then I started applying the brakes as I had like the speed wobbles going on.
Ooh.
Then when I got to the, you know, near the bottom of the hill and I started to slow down a little bit, and then I feel it. It lands right on my face and boom, stings me. So in the span of like 25 seconds, I swallowed a bug and got stung by a bee, and I haven't done either one of those things in probably 20 years. And now the swallowing of the bug hasn't bothered me, but the bee sting is like right underneath my eye. So no matter what I do, it pulses. It's a pulsating weird, like Rob talked about, he had a zit in his ear or it was in his nose.
It was in his nose.
He had a nose zit.
Yeah. Way up there too.
Yeah. And that's no good. And that's what this kind of feels like when you get, like I deal with pain on a daily basis from my cartwheels and obviously my handsprings, but like stuff hurts all the time. And that doesn't really bother me. I know that sounds funny, but on a day-to-day basis, like if you have chronic pain, you just learn to deal with it.
Mm.
But then you get one little weird thing. You get like a zit in the wrong spot, or you get stung or bit by something, and it drives me insane. I don't know what it is about this stupid bee sting, or what I'm assuming it was a bee. I didn't get to see it. I just felt it hit my face, and then I felt the sharp,
yeah.
You know. You looked at it, you can see there's like a little hole in there. I want to cut it off. I want to take a razor blade and slice the damn thing off and be done with it. It's driving me freaking crazy. Tonight marks the return of Robinson Cano for the Seattle Mariners. The Mariners, in the most Mariner-y way possible, got bludgeoned last night by the Oakland Athletics, then decided to make it interesting by rallying and then falling short 7-6. It was the most Mariner game that you could have.
Right?
Just look like absolute dog mess and then give you hope, strand a couple guys in the eighth, when you had a chance to actually make a game of it, and then come back in the ninth just to break your heart and leave the winning run stranded on base. But so I think they're what, 2.5 back now? I'm trying to look at the actual
2.5 back. Yeah.
2.5 back of Oakland. So this is a big series with the A's, and they actually play the A's a bunch. I think they've got them like 10 more times throughout the course of the year. So, I mean, there's still plenty of baseball to be played left, but this is a big series, and supposedly you get a big shot in the arm with Robinson Cano coming back tonight. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not going to be able to play in the postseason.
That pun intended?
Well, no, he made a mistake. Didn't you see he released a statement saying that he feels bad about his mistake?
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm always intrigued by, you know, is that really a mistake? Like you taking steroids or performance-enhancing drugs, I don't know if that's necessarily a mistake.
Right.
I mean, that's like an intentional thing you did, unless you buy the old tainted supplement.
You can
thing.
Call it a bad decision, sure.
Well, I guess in theory, anything could be a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Like if I came over and punched you in the face, can't I say that that was a mistake? Like a mistake is a loosely defined term.
Yeah. I mean,
like is a mistake unintentional or is a mistake just a bad choice that you make?
I guess it depends on what way you look at it.
Yeah. Like if I do a bunch of like heroin and then like end up, I don't know, like selling off my kid's college fund to pay for it. Can I call that a mistake? Or again, just poor life choice. But Robinson Cano said that he did make a mistake. He apologized for it. They're welcoming him back tonight. And he's actually going to be playing first base. Now, it sounds like he's not going to play second. Like they're not going to do that. They're leaving Gordon there.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else is kind of open to the table. In fact, I even saw today that Seager talked about that Cano's going to play some at third, and he should, because Kyle Seager has decided to suck. Like, officially, Healy's been better than Seager lately, but he's going to play first tonight, so he's going to play some first. Sure, he's going to play some third, and then, I mean, I guess you could DH him, but Nelson Cruz has been one of the most reliable bats, so right. That's you really can't do that. So I think it's just a matter of whether he plays. You know, does he play some second?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Span's been pretty good out in center field, but Robinson Cano's back. And the weird thing about it is when you look at their numbers, their offense has technically been better without Robinson Cano in it. They're averaging about 4 runs per game with him. They're averaging 4.7 without, and the batting average is slightly higher. I mean, those numbers are real close, but he has not made an impact. In fact, they started playing better when he left. And I know I mean, numbers sometimes can be funky. Rob, you're a better team with Robinson Cano than you Absolutely. Are without him. But it's weird to think that there hasn't been an offensive drop-off, at least statistically, since he left. In fact, they took off and kind of went on that big run when he got suspended. But he's still the best player that you are going to add. No team will make a better addition right now going forward than Seattle will with Robinson Cano. I mean, Robinson Cano is a legitimate all-star. Robinson Cano has been an MVP type player in the past for Seattle. And if he can come back and find a rhythm, this has a chance to be a huge boost. I mean, think of it as a trade deadline move, right? I mean, Dodgers getting Machado or any other big deals that would happen. This is kind of yours. He just can't play in the postseason. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact he has. And Healy isn't going anywhere. Healy's just not going to be in the lineup tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming going to take the day off, and maybe they do some platoon stuff, but he's going to play some third. He's going to play some first. He may play some second, but they did say that Scott Servais said this like 3 weeks ago, that he is not going to be their regular second baseman. I think they want Gordon there because of the postseason, that Robinson Cano is not going to be able to play there. So depending on what kind of hot bat he's swinging, there'll be some sort of platoon between first and third. I don't know how much third he played down in Tacoma. I've seen highlights of him playing first down in Tacoma, but I'm not certain how much that will be, going forward on the old third base. But, you know, Cano's a talented guy, and I'm sure he'll fit in the field. You know, Kyle Seager doesn't give you a lot offensively. He does play a gold glove third base. So again, do you sacrifice some glove in order for a better offense? I think this is something that's just going to kind of be tested out. It sounds like as this thing goes forward and you get into the stretch run here, there's going to be a work in progress trying to figure out how to insert Robinson Cano back in. But a huge game tonight against Oakland, because you just have all that positive momentum after sweeping the Astros. And what you can't have happen is then go lay down here and lose 3 in a row to Oakland. It's heartbreaker last night after the big comeback. You need to at least, get one, hopefully win this series and get 2 from Oakland and close this gap up just a little bit tighter.
Well, you know, if your problem right now is trying to figure out where to slide in a future Hall of Famer.
Exactly. I just think some people are not valuing this enough. And I know he can't play in the postseason, but you're right. This is a future Hall of Famer and a guy that, this will be the best addition outside of maybe Machado that's going to happen at the trade deadline or post trade deadline. I think this could have a real big impact for the Mariners. Hopefully a little fire underneath their butt tonight. All right, we come back a little in the news. Primetime here on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Robinson Cano apologized for his mistake, and people were questioning whether or not taking steroids can be considered a mistake. And we looked up the definition of what a mistake is. What did we find over there, Mr. Rust?
According to dictionary.com, the first definition says...
And who are we to question dictionary.com?
Right.
Nobody.
I mean, it's got dictionary right there in the title, right?
Damn right.
The first definition says, an error in action, calculation, opinion, or judgment... caused by poor reasoning, carelessness, insufficient knowledge, etc.
Sure. So technically anything that you do can be considered a mistake, right? Yeah, you can just say it was an error in judgment. I thought I could get away with it. I didn't. I got busted.
It was a mistake.
And it was a mistake that I got caught, right? No one ever apologizes for a mistake that you don't get caught.
Right.
Right. I don't think if you ever apologized for something that no one knew about, because, and has that ever happened in the history of mankind that you're like, you know what? This, I got away with this, but it's not feeling right. I feel like I should apologize for my mistake. That never happens. No. It's like that old parental logic where like at school, when they didn't have any evidence on you. So they did the old Christmas story. Your guilt will be much worse. No, it's not. I'll gladly live with my guilt and not get in trouble. No one just comes clean on that. A guilt trip never works on anyone. It's always better not to get caught. Always.
Always.
Yes. All right. It is August 14th, 2018, which means it's time for In the News.
By the way, happy birthday, Papa Rust.
Oh, Papa Rust.
Yeah.
How old?
He is, 2018? He's 68 today.
Can I make a confession here?
Sure.
I have no idea how old my parents are.
Yeah?
Huh. I could venture a guess. Yeah. I could get it within a couple years. Does that make me a terrible son?
No.
Does that? Better you today, text line 55305.
I guess put it this way. You know how old your kids are at least, right?
Sure.
Okay. Just forget I asked.
Nah, I do that. But I've got three of them. Sometimes the birthdays.
Yeah.
The two girls are in May.
Uh-huh.
And I... Sometimes, like on forms, look, I'm not much of a form filler outer. In a study development, I'm more of a big picture guy. I'm not really a detail-oriented parent. That's what the wife was there for?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, obviously, you know, that's no longer. Right. And so I'm forced to pick up that slack.
Yeah.
I struggle in that area. So there are times when filling out forms, and believe me, the little brats won't let me forget about it. Like I'm filling out some sort of insurance form or permission slip, and if I screw up the birthdays that they're in May and I put one to the other, oh, yes. I never freaking hear the end of it.
See, we got lucky because both of my kids, the date and the year in which they were born both match. So I've got 2/12/12 and 10/16/16. Lucky for me.
Oh, that works.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a solid effort. Like my anniversary was 3/2/1. Mm-hmm. And so that was always easy.
Yeah.
You know, I could never forget that. I'm just not very good with dates.
Yeah.
I struggle with that. So text me 55305, better you today text line. Am I a terrible son for not knowing how old my parents are?
I'll just say you're not a great son for not knowing.
Should you? I would like to honestly know how many people. Because it did not take you long to peg Papa Russ.
Yeah, I just had to do the quick math in my head because I know what year he's born.
Now, my dad died at 71. Does that count for something? I know that.
Yeah.
At least I think.
Yeah.
Think it was 71? I know roughly.
Roughly.
I got a rough idea, you know, how old they are. Does it really matter if, like, one's 66 and I think they're 67?
I don't think that's terrible.
No. I'm in the ballpark. Yeah, I don't.
As long as you guess short.
Yeah, I'm getting. Yeah, you should absolutely know your parents' age. Damn it. Yeah, I'm getting kind of beat up on this one. But this guy's right. Past 50 doesn't matter. No, at past 50, I'm gonna say past 60.
Yeah, 50 seems kind of early there.
Hey, dude, if you can get like the silver sneaker discount of like Denny's or whatever or Sherry's, then I group that all together. Yeah. I group it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The big news today, obviously, is that our air quality apparently is that of Beijing. We've got fires basically all around us. We've got fires in Canada. We got fires out in the Goldendale Sisters area. We got the California fires. And so basically we're living underneath some sort of post-apocalyptic fog. And now apparently, I guess there's a fire up in Longview.
I saw that. Like some 25-acre fire already.
I guess there's some sort of brush fire. Jeez. I just feel like this is the new norm. I feel like every summer now we just burn.
Burn.
But this is like the first day that it actually has been really bad. They are saying that this can actually be dangerous.
Yeah.
So they're telling you to like stay inside. Mm-hmm. I went on a bike ride this morning. I don't know how smart that was. I cut it short.
Yeah.
Like I went 10 miles. It wasn't like it was like a super strenuous thing or whatever. I just rode around a little bit. It was annoying, but I wouldn't say that it was like, oh, I wasn't wheezing.
Yeah.
I didn't like hack up a black lung. I wasn't working in the Virginia coal mines. Wasn't on the other side of the Cultural Time War with Jessup down there doing the coal mining thing. But I guess they're telling you stay inside if you can help it. Don't exercise, which I'm sure people don't need an excuse to do that. I don't know how many people today are like, I was going to get outside.
That sure is a weight off of my shoulders.
Start that CrossFit workout, but not going to do it today. It's going to be really bad outside.
Yeah.
Can't do it. And I guess they're saying to keep your pets inside as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, again, of all the stuff that my two fat bulldogs are going to do, that's what's going to do them in. Right. I get that the air quality is poor.
Yeah.
But sometimes the fear mongering is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many things that you can do that are terrible for you that being outside and doing a little exercise, I'm guessing that the benefits of you being outside doing something active are going to be more beneficial than the downside of you getting outside and it being a little smoggy.
I'm just
going
to go ahead and take their word for it and sit my big old white butt on the couch tonight.
Is it because of the air quality?
Yes. Yeah, totally. That wasn't going to happen otherwise.
No, that's right out. And the ICE protesters are back. Did you see that 6 religious leaders were arrested outside of the Portland ICE facility?
I did. When I was pulling in today, I saw a few camera crews perched outside.
Yeah, no, the 6 local religious leaders were detained. I saw them. They set up in front of the old gate there. And I think we had like multiple faces. The group leaders, they marched on there. They had about 100 people that kind of rolled down there. But then they all dispersed, but apparently the religious leaders were not. So I'm looking here. They got cuffed. So I guess that's still kind of going on. I guess there's like 123 plus asylum seekers, immigrants there at the ICE facility. I hate to do this because I know that's an important thing, right? Like trying to keep the pressure on. But after a while, like, don't you stop caring?
Well, that's what they're counting on, you know.
I know.
Protested.
I feel bad. Like, I get it. Like, I'm all for it. Like, reuniting families and all that. Yeah, man, I'm supportive of that.
Yeah.
But there comes a point in time, it's like my care meter only has so much in it. And while I do think protesting has like a valuable component to it, all the protests in Portland, while I can get behind a lot of them initially, just eventually I just kind of get to the, all right, had some rabbi guy there. He got arrested today. I'm like, what are you going to do? All right, when we come back, I've got I've got the e-scooter, couple pieces of e-scooter news.
Ooh.
And quite frankly, I'm going to go on a limb and say that this is my most irrational fear. Like, I try to pride myself on not having a ton of irrational fears, but this one that happened today, 22 people dead. This may be number one of my irrational fears.
I am right there with you.
That when we come back. More in the news. Primetime here on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Right smack dab in the middle of in the news. And by the way, we're getting a couple of people that are supporting my lack of awareness when it comes to my parents' age. This guy says he's 47. He has no idea how old his parents are or his sister. I was all told that by them it was polite not to ask. See, there's some people. I think most people are giving me a hard time for not knowing my parents' age.
But yes. Of course, there is also the one fellow in there that realized he's actually a year younger than he originally thought.
Oh, I do that all the time. Like, I'm turning 40 this year, so that one I'll remember. But, dude, all the time, someone asks me how old I am. I'm like, birthdays, who cares? This whole idea that, like, you're turning 40, you turn 30, it's just one extra day.
Hey, look, I am all for artificial milestones. Give me a chance to go down to the beach house for a couple of days and celebrate my birthday. Great. Let's do it.
I honestly feel like after the age of 25 and you get you can rent a car, you get a break on insurance. What does it matter? Like, they all just kind of run together.
Well, you know what it matters? Cause I know the second that I turned 30, hangover stopped going away that same day.
See, cause that's all in your head.
Oh no, it's not, my friend.
If you're 29 and 11 months and like 26 days, there's no difference between that and when you turn 30, I don't know. We're all hung up on
like a light switch.
We're hung up on the old birthdays and age thing. Like, it's just another day. I'd care less. I'm just like, it's the older I get, the more birthdays. I'm like, whatever. Like, if you're 12, by all means, have a birthday party. If you're like 44 and you're having like a birthday week, right?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a bit much.
Gals are always into that. It's like, it's my birthday week. No, it's just another day, all right? You're fine. Let it go. Update on that story. The gal that got pushed from the bridge up at Moulton Falls, which we talked about a couple weeks back, which was like a terrifying video.
Yeah.
They have identified the gal that pushed her. And there was some debate of whether it was a stranger or whether it was an adult. It turns out she's 18. Her name, I think it was Taylor Smith. Yeah, 18. She is accused. Well, I guess she's not accused. She is going to be guilty of because, well, they have it on video. She pushed Jordan Holgerson off a bridge. She has since apologized, although Jordan does not accept the apology.
I don't blame her one bit.
She says that does not cut it and that she is going to now pick her friends a little more carefully. She did suffer 5 broken ribs. She has air bubbles in her chest and she has a punctured lung.
Ugh.
And her doctor said she is very lucky she was not bleeding internally.
I mean, are you surprised to find out I was an 18-year-old? Does that not sound like the ultimate jackass 18-year-old thing to do?
That is unbelievable to me, though. Like, if you've ever been on top of that bridge, like, we overestimate all the time, like, jumping from stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the doctors are saying that at least, like, half the time, if you jump from 50 feet, even into water, you've got a chance of dying. Like, it's not... I jumped from 100 feet. No, you didn't. All right? You did not jump from 100 feet. That is the tallest thing. I've jumped off that bridge when I was young and stupid. And first off, it hurts like you know what. It stings. And I went in, you know, feet first. And it felt like I broke my feet and ankles. It was an awful experience. And that thing's like 50, 55 feet. Get the hell out of town. You jumped from 100 feet. Stop that. No, you didn't. That cliff that you think you jumped off of that was like 30 feet, it wasn't. It was like 12 feet. He's jumping from like a 75-foot cliff and is like, oh, yeah, went out on the weekend, did a 75-foot half-gainer jackknife off some cliffs. No, you didn't. You really didn't. Let's go ahead and get out the tape measure there. Because I have jumped from that stupid bridge, and it sucks. Never, ever again. So if you jump from something higher than 50 feet and you thought it was an enjoyable experience... Either A, you're a liar, or B, you're an idiot, because that thing freaking sucked. And that case has been turned over to prosecutors, and they're going to decide whether or not to file charges on her.
Good.
Which I hope she, I mean, she's 18. I'm not saying she needs to go to prison or whatever, well, but she's going to get sued.
You got to learn a lesson from this somehow.
Yeah. How about this? When someone's standing on top of a 50-foot bridge, don't push them. I'm going to kill the poor gal.
Right.
Now for my irrational fear. Bridge collapses, they scare the hell out of me. Like, just, when I drive over bridges, it's not like I think, like, the bridge is going to go down, but at least once, especially when I'm on the underside, the 405, the Fremont Bridge.
Yep.
Every single time I'm underneath that thing, the thought at least occurs to me once, oh, what if something happened? What if this thing collapsed?
Yep.
And it just freaks the hell out of me. Well, today in Italy, now, I don't know, is it Genoa? Is that the name of the city? I never heard of it, but I guess
Genoa.
Genoa?
Yeah.
It was a little city in northern Italy, and a motorway bridge collapsed. It was 50 meters high, so 160-foot high section of the bridge, including a tower that anchored several stays, crashed down with as many as 35 vehicles driving on it. And it was in a torrential rain. Huge slabs of reinforced concrete plunged down into warehouses, train tracks, and a riverbed. And the latest update, the government has said that 15 people have been admitted to the hospital, 9 in critical condition, and 26 now. At least 26 are dead. Ugh. And they're still searching through some of the rubble. And if you see, like, the footage of it, it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Just horrific. And yes, I know I talk about my all kinds of my irrational fears. This one is near the top of the list.
Oh, yeah.
It just, oh.
It's like I said in the break. Every time I drive over a bridge, I'm wondering, like, okay, if we go down here, can I make it? Where am I swimming to? Where's my little window punch out tool? And I'm probably not making it.
Well, yeah. And it's like over the water. There's, you know, a bunch of people were like kind of swept away. Like some of the video of it and the, you know, the pictures, it just, I mean, it looks like something out of a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know what was responsible for it. I was kind of reading through the story to see, I mean, I know it was in the rainfall, so I don't know. Obviously, there was a structural integrity that collapsed, but It's amazing to me that something like that can just happen. Not like on an earthquake or whatever, just some rain.
Right.
And a 150-foot bridge just goes down. But hey, don't worry, it's only 150 feet, so I'm sure some bro just jumped off of it.
Yeah.
He's Peter. Just jump right into the river.
I'm just glad I work and live feet. On the same side of the river.
Dude.
So thoughts and prayers out to the people that, loved ones, people lost in that. Just a horrific, horrific story out of Italy today. Just, yeah. All right, we come back. The Hot 5 at 5. Get you all caught up on the hot news stories of the day. Ben Kirchval will join us in the 5 o'clock hour. CBS Sports will talk about the Maryland football situation. And what I think was actually, I'm going to say, I think it was a brave thing to do today by the University of Maryland. A little bit late, but something that you just don't see a lot of in college football, and that is a university actually taking responsibility for something. Primetime here on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.